Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
We bring in our resident GM, the wonderful and talented Mike Tenenbaum. Mike, hope you're hauled up and your family is safe and sound right now.
Yeah, all good, my friends. How you guys doing?
We are we're doing the best we can. We're doing as well as I think anybody can be doing at this tough time. All right, so let's put your GM hat on for a moment. You're a GM in a league again. Draft is coming in a couple of weeks. Are you okay with that? Do you wish it would be pushed back? And how difficult do you look at this for the GM this year in the draft?
Yeah, no question. It's a lot more difficult. I could tell a couple really great examples, a couple of stories that really drill that point home. We had Darrell Revis going back to 07. He was an late declaring out junior back in the old Big East. There weren't a lot of good receivers. We didn't know a lot about him. We only had 15 minutes to talk to him at Indy. He didn't run at the combine. He had a great pro day, and we brought him in. He spoke to probably 12 to 14 people on his visit, and without that, guys, we wouldn't have drafted Revis. Likewise, I was involved in a really weird situation with Laramie Tunsil going back to 2016. He was a great kid, made a mistake. That video showed up right before the draft. He was the number one player on our board. We got him at 13. And knowing that his character was good, he had made a mistake, gave us the comfort to take the best player in the draft at 13. So I think when we're sitting here a month from today after the draft, we're going to have some huge surprises where I think you're going to have backups at big schools get overdrafted because there's comfort about their background. And there's going to be some really great small school stories that may go undrafted. And that's just the reality of what we're dealing with.
Yeah, Mike T, I mean, just the attention to detail that Laramie Tunsil had in that bong mask was enough to say that. So, Mike T, what are you expecting with the draft? I mean, obviously, with what's going on, the inability to, you know, have these one-on-one face-to-face meetings and all the other things that you guys normally would like to do. So would you imagine that there will be, you know, less movement in this year's draft, less trades, and you have a lot of GMs that are more focused on sure things as opposed to taking risks?
Yeah. I would just tell you that, I think that's right. Here's what I don't understand. Someone has to explain this to me. I've run drafts for a long time. How can you do it on video conferencing? And here's what I mean by that. When you're picking 10th guys, you're talking to teams 6, 7, 8, and 9. You're also talking to teams 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and you're trying to make the best decision with your head coach and owner sitting right there. Hey, fellas, do we go up a couple spots and try to get player X? Do we move back a couple spots? We're going to lose these three, but are we happy with this player? And we got 20 seconds. What do you want to do? And literally, like, that's how you make decisions. I don't know how you could do that on a video conference. There's a lot of things you can do. And by nature, I would tell you, like, my personality is, like, I am a problem solver. I'm a glasses half full guy. It is what it is. But someone's going to have to explain to me, like, how are you going to make trades with multiple teams, call the league office, and do that on video conferencing? As powerful as we have technology, someone needs to explain that to me.
But I imagine that those deals will not be done maybe before, though, no, Mike? Maybe you find a way to maybe some of those deals. I mean, if you're a team that's trying to get up to three to get the quarterback, maybe you make that deal not on draft day. That's something that happens a couple days before.
No question about it, Rick. But what's going to happen is, let's say we agree we're in Miami and we want to go up to Detroit, and then all of a sudden, you know, something happens and Washington trades back a spot with Detroit, and now, you know, things are going to change. They always do. Like, if we sat here the Monday after the draft, I promise you, we will all say, "Wow, we didn't expect this to happen or that to happen." It's just, that's one of the great things about the draft. It plays out. It's the ultimate reality show that plays out on prime time for a couple nights. And my point is, you need to have all the key decision makers in the room, and physically you need at least three or four people to make all these calls. And then, you know, one of the challenges of running the draft is say, like, okay, no to that trade, yes to this trade, how much time is on the clock, call the league office. And the way it works, just to take you behind the scenes, is you're on the clock until you make a trade and the league office has two matching phone calls at the exact same time. So even though we have an agreement with Detroit to move up, until all our draft choices that we're saying were, are part of that trade, and we call in the league office, and Detroit calls the league office and gives the exact number of picks, like the third pick, 71 overall, whatever it may be, they're still on the clock. And you'd be shocked how sometimes it's cut really close to trades either happening or not happening.
Mike T, Todd McShay came out with his latest mock draft today, and in it, he's got four quarterbacks going in the top 10. It's Justin Herbert is the last one going ninth to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, last time we saw that was 2018, where we had four quarterbacks going in the top 10, and Josh Rosen went 10th overall to the Arizona Cardinals. But it felt like that quarterback draft class had a lot more fanfare than this quarterback draft class. So can you compare and contrast the two quarterback draft class?
Yeah, I think Jordan Love is a huge wild card. Like, if he was a good player, Chris, I would not be surprised. If he was a big disappointment, I would not be surprised. He didn't play well this year. And we could go watch the LSU game and say, well, you know, the he sailed some balls in that game, and there were some other games, Boise State. He had opportunities. I just don't think when he had opportunities to show his abilities, he didn't play well. And to me, I rather, in this day and age, draft Justin Herbert, who's much more of a Johnson & Johnson stock, where you may get a 3% dividend, but you know what you have. It's rock solid. Jordan Love is an ultimate boomer bust guy, in my opinion. And in this weird year of not having more time with a prospect, you're going to have to convince me why that's good business to take him in the top 10.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, getting back to your prior point of trades and how does it go down and what do you do, and just spitballing here, can you – look, we have is time, right? I mean, we do the show for 3 hours. A lot of people are just at home doing nothing. Can we extend the time? Can we start the draft instead of 8 o'clock on the 23rd, start it at 6 o'clock, and say every team has 25 minutes for their first-round selection just to give a little more time to maneuver and get things done?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think so, but at the end of the day, I'm just telling you, Dave, like, if you have 25 minutes, people are going to wait to the last second to squeeze out their best sort of, you know, again, I've made so many trades, like it just comes down to the last second. When we traded up for Mark Sanchez going back to 2009, we traded three players, and not to get overcomplicated here, but when you trade a player, if you think about it, you need a condition on the player, because if the player goes there and he fails the physical, you now have to give a corresponding pick. So If we trade Chris Canty from the New York Giants to the Dallas Cowboys for a third-round pick during the draft, and Chris goes there and fails the physical, what's the corresponding pick that goes between those two teams? So not only do you need an agreement on the player and the pick, you also need an agreement on the condition if it doesn't happen. So it gets very complicated very quickly. And again, you need simultaneous phone calls to a central number at the league office. And without that, there's no trade. So you could have an hour and 25 minutes, but deadlines is when things actually do happen.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike T, before I ask my question, if you need to FaceTime me to figure out how to make that chai soy tea latte, just let me know. I'll walk you through it. We spent a lot of the first hour of the show, Mike, talking about Jay Glazer's report that Dave Gettleman was on the hot seat and had to have a better season. Here's what I find interesting, though. You hired a rookie head coach, and when you look at the Giants' opponents and the fact that, you know, you're going to have a condensed training camp, potentially no OTAs, how far behind the eight ball will a team like the New York Giants with a young quarterback and a new head coach and new offensive coordinator be this season?
Yeah, look, I think when you have the privilege of one of these positions, guys, I think you're on the hot seat from the day you get the position. And whether it's fair or unfair, you know, we've seen coaches one and done recently. And I never felt there was a day that when I was the general manager of the Jets or in the Dolphins that I didn't feel the weight of the world on my shoulders. And candidly, I always felt the weight of the world to live up to the expectations of my teammates in the building. I think really, if I'm Dave, I need to show progress this year. I want Joe Judge and Daniel Jones to be bootstrapped together, and I want them to be really successful for the next 10 years. And when I make this fourth pick, like, what's going to give them the best chance to be successful? And if that's a left tackle, then great, let's do that. I think the other really interesting player, though, specifically, is Isaiah Simmons. I think he's the answer on defense to what we're seeing with Tyreek Hill, to Deebo Samuel. Like, we're talking a lot, guys, in pro football now about positionless offensive players where they're just weapons. I think Isaiah Simmons may be the first player we've seen in a long time that may be a positionless defensive player.
Mike T, one of the quarterbacks that's been speculated available via trade in the marketplace is Andy Dalton. I guess I got a two-part question. One, are we just waiting for the Bengals to go through the formality of drafting Joe Burrow, number one, before they deal Dalton? And two, where do you think Andy Dalton ends up?
Yeah, that's a great point, Chris. I don't know what they're waiting on. I think they have less leverage in the trades, not more. I mean, by any sort of, you know, measurement, you would say New England, the Chargers, and maybe Jacksonville would be the three teams that possibly could be in the Andy Dalton market. I don't think they have, like, so for example, let's say New England trades up for, and I'm making this up, Jordan Love in the draft. Cincinnati has less leverage. I don't know what they're waiting for strategically, unless they're saying, like, you know what, we'll take him through Labor Day and going back a number of years. But when you know, Teddy Bridgewater got hurt, and remember when Philadelphia traded Bradford in training camp from Philly to Minnesota, maybe they're waiting on that. But I'm a big Andy Dalton fan. I don't know why he wouldn't be successful as a starter. And New England, to me, was always the spot where I think that makes sense for both sides. The only other thing I'd like to add, though, is last year something underrated happened, which I think bears worth mentioning. On the last cut on Labor Day, New England cut Brian Hoyer and kept Stidham. And they really must like Stidham to do that. So they had a good team last year. It was kind of under the radar. But there may be something up in New England with how they really feel about Jared Stidham.
All right, Mike,
just to follow up really quick with the example that you cited, I mean, the Minnesota Vikings gave up a first-round pick for Sam Bradford. Are you saying if a team has an injury at quarterback that Andy Dalton could fetch a first-round draft pick?
I can tell you, like, people like myself have been desperate to sign quarterbacks in August, and while we didn't give up a first-round pick, we took Jay Cutler out of the Fox broadcast booth. So, and I'm not proud of that, but that was just the reality. You know, our starting quarterback got hurt in August, and it is what it is. You know, like, sometimes you have to have a chai latte without soy milk. You know, it's about supply and demand and, you know, where you are. And, you know, sometimes you have a good hand, and sometimes you're negotiating for weakness, Chris.
That's funny. Mike, I'm going to save you. I know you have to go, so I'm not going to let Rick go on his barrage of last questions. We're going to let you go, and we will talk to you next Tuesday, and stay very safe, and we appreciate your time as always.
Absolutely, guys. It's great. Always great being with you, and look forward to chopping it up next week.
All right, good stuff. That, of course, is Mike Tenenbaum. We are close from the draft, by the way. We are, what, 3 weeks from Thursday from the NFL draft, Chris? 3 weeks from this Thursday.
3 weeks, Dave. It's not that far away. It's unbelievable how it's right around the corner. But to Mike T's point, I mean, I think that there's an extra degree of difficulty this year just because you can't have face-to-face meetings with the prospects and you don't have as much information because a lot of these guys weren't able to perform pro days. So it'll be really interesting. But I think if you have a proven general manager that knows what the hell he's doing, that team clearly has an advantage based on how this offseason has unfolded.
Yeah. I would agree with that 100%, Rick, and I would say right now, knowing the track record of Dave Gettleman, I have little confidence, and knowing the parameters he'll be under this draft, I probably have less confidence than I would have normally.
Yeah, I think that you're going to see a lot more GMs err on the side of caution as opposed to trying to take big swings at you know, what could be. I think you're going to get more proven commodities than, if I was a GM, I would draft more on production than potential.
Right.
Under these kind of circumstances.
And how do you draft Tua having never seen him throw the football?
Because you love him. You've always loved him. And if you feel comfortable, or, I mean, if it's the Miami Dolphins or the Chargers, whoever it is, then, I think it's less about that and more, if you're the Miami Dolphins, you'll love Tua because of the situation, the circumstances, no one, you know, able to get their hands on Tua. You're just watching videos and you know, talking on, you know, FaceTime or whatever it is, it really becomes the question, do we stay pat at five and risk it, or do we give up assets to get up to three to make sure that we get them?
Yep. Now, there's a lot of questions. This draft, and obviously for bad reasons, will be more intriguing than a normal draft. I mean, just the parameters, just the things that you have to overcome to be able to draft effectively is very, very difficult. Let's go to Train in the Truck. Train, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, how you guys doing? I don't know how I'll get through this time without you guys, to be honest. But I just want to say something real quick. I work for a private sanitation company, and it's kind of bittersweet that we've got these letters on roll-off and commercial drivers. Their hours are getting cut like crazy, and they're not making any money. And me on the residential side, it's actually completely opposite. We're seeing maybe like 5 tons extra a week from everybody staying home. You know what I'm saying? And I'm actually pulling in more overtime than usual. So I just wanted to give you guys a little insight that, you know, it's affecting everybody, obviously. But, you know, I don't hear a lot of, you know, sanitation talk. And, you know, that's all. We're out here pulling in a lot more overtime from the people staying home, pulling in more trash and more trash. That's all.
You're right. You're right. And we appreciate you. We really do. And thanks for the phone call, Train. I mean, what you guys do when you're out there, and listen, we're told do not leave, and you guys are out there and doing what you do, and we do appreciate that. And let me throw one out there. Maybe Rick, you can throw one out there, and Chris as well. I'll start. Now, I mentioned I make my trek out to the mailbox. How about the postmen who are up and down the streets, who are delivering our mail every day? I mean, a huge thank you to them for doing that, because it would be very easy for them to not want to, and maybe they don't, but they do, and we certainly do. Thank all the postmen and postwomen out there that are helping in every way that they can. All right, Rick, do you have anybody you'd like to give a special thanks to?
No, I do. And just, I mean, as far as Train is concerned, and we have a great relationship with our sanitation department. But I mean, it's funny that he even mentions that, because we eat at home so often that Cassie and I will look at each other like, so our garbage day is on a Sunday night and on a Wednesday. And by Monday night, she looks at me, she's like, "What? Why do we have so much garbage? But we eat home so often." Mm-hmm. I can understand it. I mean, when everyone's stuck in the house and you're eating all your meals at home, between dishes and garbage, I mean, it never stops. I mentioned this yesterday, and I want to give them another shout out because they deserve it. But I mean, what the Carpenters Union is doing. So I mentioned yesterday that they built the 1,000 hospital beds inside the Javits Center, and they did it in two days. They started building the next 1,500 rooms today. They expect to be done in 2.5 to 3 days. What they also do too, which I didn't even realize, I talked to a couple of them yesterday. They actually build the hockey rinks in New York City for the Special Olympics, which is unbelievable. And then I also want to say too that local 3 electricians, they've been supplying all the power. So big shout out, big thank you to them as well.
Dave, I want to recognize the medical professionals that are coming from other cities to be here at the epicenter of the crisis in America, in New York City, just coming to help our city out right now with all the cases of COVID-19, recognizing that the infrastructure, the medical staff that we have here was being overwhelmed. They decided to drop everything and come to New York City and pitch in. So I got to give a big shout out to them as well. Dozens and dozens of folks coming from other places, putting themselves in harm's way in order to help our community out.
So for the postmen, for the sanitation workers, for the doctors, for the nurses, for the carpenters, for the electricians, for everyone, you know what you can do to thank them? Do nothing. Stay in your house, eat your food, make your garbage, watch Ozark, and put your feet up on the couch and do nothing. I heard Kay talking about it for a few minutes yesterday. 2 months ago, I would have said, you know what? I'm not leaving the house for the weekend, Rick. I'm going to lie my fat butt on the couch and just watch TV. And you'd be like, oh, come on. You're disgusting. And if I told you that, or anybody told you that now, you'd say, thank you for what you're doing. You can help us win by doing absolutely nothing.
That's what's incredible, though. And I mean, how many times do we have conversations talking about sports and our kids? And, you know, how when we were kids, you'd walk down the street and the kids be playing stickball, street hockey, whatever it is, basketball, manhunt, tag. Like, we were always outside. You never see that. Like, you never do you see that. You know, with the video games and, you know, the FaceTime, the Twitter, all the social media, I mean, all the things the kids would do to make sure they stayed inside. And now you can't keep them inside. Now everyone wants to be outside.
Yep.
Let's go out and play. Well, we couldn't get you out of the house. And now when they tell you to stay in the house, all you want to do is go outside.
It really is unbelievable, Rick. I don't even know what to say. But yeah, you see more people outside than you ever did before. But I saw a post on social media that framed everything, that put everything in perspective. It said that our parents' generation, those folks got drafted. They went off to war to defend our country. Right now, our generation's biggest call is being able to stay in the house in order to contain this virus. It doesn't seem like it's a hard ask. Rick, I know you've talked about your dad and how he served in the armed forces. It's unbelievable, really. The best thing that we can do in order to fight this war and win this war against COVID-19 is to stay in house. And somehow, some way, some people can't even do that. I don't understand it.
I know. And it's not about you being sick. It's about what you could potentially bring to other people. And just be safe and just stay in your house. Really, that's it. Just stay in your house.
Here's the thing I don't understand, though, Dave. I mean, we're in the middle of this pandemic, right? With, I mean, the numbers are just getting worse and worse. I mean, people dying. I mean, to the point now where, I mean, you're bringing in refrigerated trucks and using them as morgues for dead bodies. It's like, how much more do you need to see before you start really taking this thing serious?
And
you,
I don't know.
Listen to whatever. I don't get it.
I don't know. People are, they're confounding. I do not understand. I mean, you watch the news, you listen to what people say. It's incredibly transmitted, right? Whether you're in 6 feet or you come in contact with people, right? We all know this is true. Stay away. Like it, I don't know. To me, this seems like a no-brainer. And I saw that photo yesterday of the ship coming in, right? The hospital ship coming into the harbor here in New York, and people line like a tourist attraction lined up where they couldn't separate each other by more than a half a foot. And I thought to myself, They still don't get it, which surprised me, Rick, because we're in New York, and I would think that if there's anywhere that would get it, it would be New York. This is not, you know, middle America where you say, well, it hasn't really hit them as much, or they just don't get it. This is New York, for God's sakes. I expected better from New Yorkers.
I mean, at a certain point, I mean, enough is enough. I mean, you see what happened down in Virginia. I mean, they just said, you know what, you can't control yourselves. That's fine. We'll see you in June. We're going to shut this thing down until June. I mean, what do you need to see? Do you need to see does the news have to be outside of the hospitals? You know, and so you can see the dead bodies being wheeled out of the hospitals for you to finally take this thing. So you have some awareness. Stop being so freaking self-centered and it's all about you. It's not about you right now. It's about getting this thing under control, flattening the curve so we can get back to some normalcy. The longer you go out and you don't pay attention to the things you're supposed to be doing, the longer this thing will last and the more miserable you'll get.
That's right.
I actually hope it rains every day. I'm actually hoping that it rains every single day so people actually stay inside, because all of a sudden it gets sunny out and now it's party time. Everyone's out.
Not rains hard enough that it affects my DirecTV, okay?
Okay, I mean, it's just
like a heavy steady, drizzle would be fine.
Yeah, a steady little rain that keeps you in the house.
Fair enough. Now, there are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters at 98.7 ESPN New York. We want to hear from you. 800-919-3776 about your experiences. If there's someone you want to thank, we're certainly open to the idea and to listening to it. These trying times, very important to remember. We pull together as a community. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, please let us know. Send an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com and let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. All right, are you in the mood for some pizza, Italian food, or Sloppy Joe's right now? It's 11:30, so make your choice.
It's 11:30.
Yeah.
I could go breakfast pizza, which is also – let's go pizza.
Pizza. All right, D'Angelo's, located at 813 Willis Avenue in Albertson, New York, open 7 days a week from 11 to 9 for takeout, delivery, and curbside pickup, Italian food, and the best pizza on Long Island, home of the Grandma Pizza. Give them a call at 516-741-8694. I really enjoy the Grandma Pizza.
Love the Grandma's Pizza. Love it.
Yeah.
Go to Umberto's, get that extra garlic, extra basil. Well done. Delicious.
Yeah, that really is delicious stuff. So you got Sloppy Joe's coming up in the noon hour. I hope you're hungry.
I'm starving. Absolutely starving.
Rick tweets in, guys, I like hearing the shout outs and absolutely. And we're happy to do it. Let's also shout out to lab couriers like myself, a BioReference Labs, who have to pick up and ride for miles with this pandemic in a cooler in our trunks. Thanks so much. Everybody. I mean, you know, the thing is, Chris, there's probably so many people that are doing things that are helping everyone that we absolutely have no idea of. So if you are one of those people or want to shout out one of those people, we would love to hear from you right now.
Yeah, Dave, there are going to be a lot of unsung heroes in this war that's being waged against COVID-19. And, you know, we're just talking about the folks that we know of, or the folks that are being mentioned in the daily news cycle, but there are so many people that are going to play a part in us being able to overcome this pandemic, and we'd love to hear from everybody that's involved, because it literally is going to take something from all of us, but there are actually some folks that are actually in harm's way doing a whole lot more, and we can't thank them enough.
Absolutely. All right, so we had asked about this and queried about this, and then it was, well, it's not going to be ready, and it won't be ready. Well, they announced this morning on Good Morning America, the Michael Jordan series that's going to be on ESPN, The Last Dance, has been moved up to April. It's going to be on April 19th, and my understanding is it's going to be every Sunday for five consecutive weeks. So we're going to get to see, and I am one of the few. I did not like Michael Jordan because I'm a Knicks fan, and the torture he gave me throughout my lifetime. But I am looking forward to this, and that's going to start on April 19th, Rick, so just a couple weeks away.
Yeah, I can't wait. But you say, I mean, you say you don't like Michael Jordan.
I don't.
I mean, you got to at least respect. I mean, he's,
of course,
you got to respect Michael.
Of course.
Jordan.
I mean, I mean, he's the greatest, and it's hard to, even when we talk about LeBron or Kobe or anybody, to put them ahead of Michael Jordan. But it doesn't mean I have to like him. I mean, I respected, you know, Emmitt Smith as well, but I didn't like him. I respected Michael Irvin. I didn't like him. Yeah, of course, I respected Michael Jordan.
So, in your mind, Michael Jordan, greatest of all time.
Yes, I think so. I would say Michael 1, LeBron 2, and the story is still not completely written on LeBron, Chris. That's how I would go, yes.
Yeah, I would definitely go Michael Jordan 1, and then LeBron probably 2, although you got Kareem, you got Magic. Both of those guys, to me, have got to be in the top 5 as well. So, yeah, but, I mean, I can't wait for this documentary to drop, Dave. I can't wait. I mean, you guys know my girl is from Chicago. She grew up on the South Side during the Jordan era. And she said, I mean, it was definitely a vibe, and the energy in the city was just different. When the Bulls were playing at home, she said you could actually rob a bank and nobody would chase you because everybody was paying attention to the Chicago Bulls. So just what it meant for the culture, what it meant for sports as a whole, I'm excited to get the behind-the-scenes story on everything that went down with that 98 team.
Would you say, Dave, I know you've been paying attention to this, so ESPN's running the greatest college basketball player of all time,
right?
That bracket.
Wait, and you're going to let me beat you to the punch of what you might be saying.
Oh, please, hold on. I'm just, please, this again, further proof that you know me. Say it.
Michael Jordan should not be in the top four of the greatest college basketball player of all time.
I wasn't going to necessarily say that.
No?
I was going to say, how was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar not?
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, no, it may. I mean, I don't think people realize how great Patrick Ewing was. And also, Michael Jordan didn't stay for the 4 years. And there used to be a joke, and Kareem, you're right, well, Lou Alcindor at the time, but Michael Jordan, there was an old joke about him, I don't know if you guys ever heard it, who's the only person that could hold Michael Jordan under 20 points? And the answer was always Dean Smith was the only one that could do it, who was his coach in college. Because he was a great college player, but was he one of the top four college players in the history of college basketball? I'm sorry, the answer is no. Ralph Sampson, and I know you hear this, you're like, what? Ralph Sampson was a better college basketball player than Michael Jordan. And you just heard me say that in my mind, Michael Jordan is the greatest NBA player in the history of the game. And he was a great college player, but he was not a top four college player in the history of college basketball, Chris. He was not.
No, I agree with you on that one, Dave. And you brought up Ralph Sampson. I would have loved to see what his pro career would have been had he not had the injury. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, Michael Jordan, we didn't know that Michael Jordan was going to become what he was going to become, because otherwise in that, what was it, the 83 draft, he would have been the number one overall pick instead of the third overall pick. So, I mean, it's one of those situations where a lot of people missed. A lot of people didn't see the talent. And I guess you could attribute it to the style of play that Dean Smith had with the Tar Heels back in the day, but
look at that stupid corners that they used to run.
That four corners, exactly, exactly. But I mean, Michael Jordan's story is an incredible one. I mean, this guy just willed himself to become the greatest of all time. And yeah, there was a lot of physical talent, but the thing that separates Michael Jordan from everybody else is his mentality.
I would agree with that. And the ability to, I mean, this is a guy that in the middle of a playoff series went to Atlantic City, spent the night gambling, came back and you know, was dominant. Like, you don't see guys are not capable of doing things like that, Rick.
No, that's why I'm so interested to see this documentary.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear the stories and for him, I mean, for him to be able to do what he was able to do, I mean, at that level with some of the things he was doing off the court. I mean, some guys are just special like that, man. I tell you the Chelios stories all the time. Like, some guys can just do it.
Yeah.
And there are guys that try to do it, why they even think they can do it is amazing to me, but they try and they fail miserably.
So is that just something you have? Like you're just able to do it and it's God-given?
Yeah, some guys are just special. I mean, we had these conversations about Odell. Like Odell can jump on a plane on a Sunday night and go to LA for the day, come back, and he's still the best player on the field. I mean, guys try to do it. I mean, guys go on a boat trip and come back, and they're guys. They're not at the level of some of these guys.
So The Last Dance takes an in-depth look at the Chicago Bulls dynasty through the lens of the final championship during the 97-98 season. The Bulls allowed an NBA entertainment crew to follow them around for the entire season, and some of that never-before-seen footage will be in the documentary. It's amazing to think that something like this has never been done. I mean, we're talking about 22 years ago now, and we're finally get to see some of this footage. It's kind of cool.
You know what's incredible to me, Dave, is that they actually had a camera crew follow them around the entire season, and we have yet to see a lot of that footage. And that's the part that I can't wait to get a gander at, is just to actually see what was happening with that late 90s Bulls teams with all of those different personalities. Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman. I mean, the list goes on and on in terms of guys that had strong personalities. And in the middle of that, you have the alpha, which is Michael Jordan. So it's going to be really cool.
Gonna be real, really, really awesome. All right, Al S. on Twitter, the Mental Health Association of Essex and Morris, I'd like to give them a shout out. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, making sure that our special needs clientele have food. Our homeless population knows where to turn. We're still bringing services to our clients, albeit on a limited basis. So to Al S. and everyone doing work like that in Essex and Morris and all over, we tip our caps and a huge, huge thank you. This has become a daily occurrence, guys. Andy and Merrick. Andy would like to try and stump each and all of us. Good morning, Andy and Merrick.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
We're doing as good as we can be doing, Andy.
Yeah, tough times. Well, I'm going to try to keep it light with a quick couple trivia questions. Starting with Chris. How are you, Chris?
Let's go.
2005 draft, you were a fourth-round draft pick from the Dallas Cowboys. There was a second fourth-round draft pick that year. Who was it?
Marion Barber from Minnesota.
You got it.
Nice.
Right out of the park. All
beautiful.
Right.
Beautiful.
That was a good one.
Beautiful.
Rick.
Yeah,
as far as I can tell, there are three goalies that have played for both the Rangers, Islanders, and Devils. Can you name two of them?
Yeah, Kevin Weeks and John Van Beesbrouck.
You got it.
Oh! Look at what's happening here.
You guys are too good. You want to try and name the third one, too?
No, I don't. I know who it is.
Dave,
you said two of three, Andy.
You
said two of three.
Dave, do you want to tell him who the third one is?
No.
All right, Mike Dunham. All right, Dave, a lot of pressure on you. Your boys have taken the
Yeah, they've been
today.
Dominant. But here's what I see. I see you giving them these questions that are right in their wheelhouse, and you're going to ask me about something impossible. But
it's going to be a tough one. It's a Giants question.
Of course it's going to be a tough one. Go ahead.
Ask him a weightlifting question.
There have been six Giants drafted out of Clemson in the history of the Giant drafts. Two of them have been first-round picks. Who are those two first-round picks out of Clemson University?
Dexter Lawrence, Terry Kinnard.
Oh, God. I got to step up my game, boys.
That's right, baby. How about, I mean, the questions were excellent. Thanks, Andy. We appreciate the call as always. We just knocked it completely out of the park.
I mean, you didn't even have to get the Google Gimpo for that one.
No, I knew that right off the top of my head.
Now, Dave, are you social distancing with the Google Gimp, or how does that work?
Yeah, we just throw food into him every night. From 6 feet away.
Just let him, he just takes the tennis ball out of his mouth and eats.
Exactly. And exactly. We have the pet go in there and do that because it can't be transferred from pet to human. So that's how we.
Hey, I got a fun game. Tell me if you guys are interested. You ready for this?
Okay.
Speaking of all the fun we just had with that, it was a dynamite segment.
You feel good when we all get it right? Like when one of us gets it, I feel good for that person and for the show as a whole. But when we all dominate like that, that's a wonderful job.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, you know, we did so poorly yesterday kind of just, it ruined the whole hour for me, to be honest. How do you feel about playing, and I teased this yesterday, a little Tiger King game at some point?
Tell me more.
Okay, so this is what we're going to do, because I couldn't help when I'm watching the Tiger King. I'm they're going to make, like, there will be a Tiger King movie made at some point because it's just, I mean, it's that good.
Did I see that Shaquille O'Neal was in it, by the way?
Shaq was. Yeah, dude. I mean,
yes,
you
he was at the park. Yeah, he was at the zoo. Yep.
He actually says that he bought two tigers. Now, he's refuting that, but he actually says in the show that he bought two tigers. I mean, Doc Antle, that Britney Spears VMA performance, he was responsible for that tiger. Like, it's crazy. You got to watch this, Dave. So I was thinking we do, if you could cast in the upcoming movie your favorite athlete celebrities, who would play the parts in this movie? So who would play Joe Exotic? Who would play Doc Antle? If you want to throw in Jeff Lowe.
I like it, but here's the thing. I haven't seen it yet, so you got to give me a couple days to at least watch some of the episodes.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, okay. I'm just I have a feeling that we have such great listeners that they'll be spot on. Like they'll be an unbelievable. They'll put together an unbelievable cast of who should play them.
Now I don't need to watch the entirety just to know the characters, right?
No, you can Google it. I mean, just go on. I mean, go Tiger King cast. And you just see the images. You see the
picture. Let's do it tomorrow. I'd like to at least dip my feet into the pool of Tiger King so I have a little bit of knowledge of who these guys are. And then I'm all for it tomorrow.
Yeah, dip your toe in. And
I do think in the noon hour we should send you into the bathroom of despair and try to...
Cassie already brought the bucket up. We're all ready to go.
So can we bring you live on the phone from the bathroom in the noon hour?
I will bring the phone in with me and I will attempt to suck.
Chris, what do you think? Like the gambling public would be betting on whether it gets fixed or not. You think the odds are in Rick's favor or not?
No, I think Rick is a dog in this situation. He's absolutely an underdog. I mean,
so the toilet is minus 300 in this thing?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Rick, I'm not even putting it higher than that, plus 240.
And I'm throwing out I'm telling you right now, if I'm successful, there will be a Cam Newton-like post where I'm not the underdog. How am I the underdog when I've been the dog and I'll have the plunger over my shoulder?
What are you thinking, Rick? You thinking right at the noon hour you go? Or are you thinking you give us 10 minutes and then we start the process after that? How would you like to attack this toilet situation?
No, it's your call. I mean, it's your call. I'm actually feeling more and more confident that I'm going to get this job done. So, I mean, if you want me to start the noon hour and then I'll go in there, get all set up and then call you.
Chris, what do you feel comfortable with?
I think that should be in the second segment of the noon hour where we usually have observations because I think Rick is setting himself up for failure.
You think it's going to... No, here's what I... No, it can't be that.
This toilet problem.
I think we need to do in the back end of the first segment, and then if he fails dramatically, then at least he can save himself with the successful observations.
Dave, this is not going to go well. This is not going to go well. It's not going to be good.
You have so little confidence in him.
He needs to abort the plan immediately.
I can't do it now. I'm into it now. I have no choice now. Cassie brought up the bucket. She's got it all set up. Like the expectation is that I go in there with this advice from our friends that called into the show and I get the job done. Like that's the expectation now. You guys have set me up to be either the hero or the go.
Yeah, but I think it's going to make for entertaining radio either way.
I'm here to entertain, man.
And you'll set the scene again. Like as you go into the bathroom. You'll set the scene of what happened, what Cassie did, how the whole thing went down, so people that were not listening earlier on in the show can really feel a part of the situation. All right, let's get to the calls. Thomas Leho tweets in, can I get a shout-out to all the elevator mechanics of Local 1 keeping the city going up and down through the scary time? Of course you can, Thomas, and thank you to all those that are helping in that way and in every way. 800-919-3776. Before you go and attack this toilet, Ed in Jersey has a little bit of advice. Ed, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, how we doing, guys? First time, long time.
Well, we appreciate the call, Ed.
Candy, thanks for the championship. Rick, just want to let you know, I work for a septic service. We're out here. Now that everyone's home, we've been busier than ever. And just want to let you know, baby wife in the septic tank, big no-no. And I heard your wife.
Yeah, but they said they're flushable, it says.
I'm just letting you know, even if they're flushable, they're just not good for the field. If you have a pit, whatever, at the end of the day, they just end up becoming big clogs of cement, and it's not good for the life.
Let me ask you a question, though. Let me ask you a question, and you're probably right. But let me ask you a question. As opposed to, and I was thinking about this morning when I was using my booty wipes, is that and this is a terrific wipe, too. I mean, just the square footage of this wipe. I can get, three or four wipes per wipe, So I'm only really using two wipes. Isn't that better than using a bunch of toilet paper?
For dissolve, it's a little better, but I mean, yeah, I mean, if you're using it sparingly, it shouldn't be too bad, but just letting you know, the pad that's in the toilet, the plunger might not work. If you got one of those toilet augers, that's probably a better chance to get it out. We also have a machine, it's a high-pressure jetter that we go from the inlet of your tank all the way into your house, and we flush that whole line out, and that way it's like a brand new pipe.
So, nice. Ed, for you, this would be, you'd be in and out in 10 minutes in his house.
10, 15 minutes, we'd be in and out. But also, just to let you know, he got my name wrong. It's Anthony, but I think it's funny when people get my name wrong, so I didn't correct him.
I don't know why, thanks for the call, Anthony. I always find it funny when we get the name so wrong. Like, you know, Ed to you know, something close, okay. Ed to Anthony, I don't know. I just find that to be
Yeah, that's funny. Tough.
Right?
That's tough. See, I think I'm doing a solid by using the wipes, though. I'm not using nearly as much. I don't use any toilet paper, but I don't
have to use. I tried to tell you this months ago when you talked about it, and so proud of the, I use wipes and wipes. And
you have to use wipes.
It's a mistake.
It's not a mistake. It's a mistake not to use the wipes. I mean, unless you're not ever wearing white underwear, you got to use the wipes. Otherwise,
and Anthony just said you can't use the wipes. And
I'm only using two wipes.
Why you can?
But I'm only using two wipes. I mean, what if you get in that one? That it happens. I mean, it has to happen to you at least once a week, where you get the stump that's still there, and it's like you're sanding away at it, and it just won't go away. And it's just you keep wiping and wiping and wiping, and it's like, what the hell is going on? You can't be using toilet paper for that.
I would use more toilet paper than wipes.
See, you're making a mistake.
He just told you no, and you tried to convince him.
Well, it's because he's acting like I'm using 7-8 wipes a sitting. I'm using
Chris,
two wipes.
Chris, do you use wipes or toilet paper?
I use both. I think it's a mistake not to use wipes, but I don't know if I'm going to go as far as Rico, where I'm using multiple wipes per trip to the bathroom.
I'm only using two wipes, guys. You act like I'm taking advantage of the wipes.
Right.
It's only two
wipes. Well, look, in the noon hour, of the three of us, who's going to repair the toilet live on the show?
I am, but it's not because of my wipe situation.
Well, we don't know. Maybe the wipes are down there causing trouble, and because of it, the scrub brush she pushed down there can't get through the wipes.
No, she did not push it down, and she flushed it down. Big difference. She made a conscious decision to press to flush it. She's a savage. I mean, yeah, Milo, yes, I can understand. Her, there's no excuse for that.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you what. This is setting up for failure, but this is also setting up. I mean, what is it, only Tuesday? I could, if this thing works and I suck that thing out, this is going to set me up for the, I mean, once I get over this oblique strain, when I try to, I'm set up for the rest of the week.
Oh, for months, really.
Oh, you're going to be good. You're going to be good.
I mean, she'll look at you as Dr. Braveheart if you get this done.
That's going to be like the Kentucky Derby over here.
800-919.
Today won't be the only plumbing you're doing.
3776. Now, schools are going to survive. Communities will thrive. But for student athletes who have lost their senior seasons due to this pandemic, 98.7 ESPN would like to salute you for accomplishing great achievements in scholastics and athletics. Please email us at 987ESPN@gmail.com. to tell your athlete story, and we'll do our best to share those stories. Like Michael Sadowski of Queens Metropolitan High School in Forest Hills. Over his first 3 years, he batted .450 with 17 extra base hits, but his real damage was done on the mound. Listen to this, Rick. In 3 years, he pitched to a .49 ERA with 193 strikeouts to only 26 walks. His sophomore year, started all five playoff games en route to the NYC PSAL A Division Championship. In addition to being a stud on the field, he got it done in the classroom as well. Selected as the New Era Pinstripe Bowl 2019 MVP Scholar Athlete Award, which is awarded at Yankee Stadium in December. He accepted an offer and will be continuing his studies and baseball career at SUNY Oneonta. So of all of that, as upsetting as it is for Michael Sadowski, Queens Metropolitan High School, at least he does continue to play baseball at a high level at SUNY Oneonta next year.
Yeah, that's it too. I mean, that's it. I mean, we're watching, you know, watch SVP and all that other stuff. I mean, for the kids that don't have that opportunity to play at the next level, and it's as good as it gets. That, I mean, crushing. I couldn't even imagine.
Yep, totally heartbreaking.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.